Hello, my friends, and welcome to the Breathcast. My name is Mike Mayer, and oh my God, have I got an episode for you today. I've got the legendary Mr. Jesse Coomer on the channel. Now, Jesse has been a breathwork instructor for many years. I think he was one of the first, if not the first, American Wim Hof breathwork instructor way back in the day. But he is so much more than that. He has his own book out called A Practical Guide to Breathwork, and he has another book coming out, it may even be out by now, called The Language of Breath, which is just lovely. And he was an English professor. So this is a very multi-dimensional, beautiful human being here, who just also has a very safe pair of eyes. You just know he's going to look after you. He's just a good human. So we have a deep conversation about breath, the language of breathing, how breathing affects us, different breathing techniques, really, really powerful conversation you're going to enjoy. Now, the other reason Jesse's here, he's part of my Breath Master series. And so for those of you that don't know, I do have an app out now. It's called The Breath Source, and it is the app for breathing. It took me 6 or 7 years to finally be swayed to start an app with a group of collectives of people. And this is really the first app, as far as I'm aware, where a group of breathwork instructors have come together to shape the app. So it's really owned by the breathwork instructors. So it's not like a load of clinical animated bubbles. It's different breathwork instructors teaching breathwork, teaching their own breathing modalities, live classes, teacher training, retreats, beautiful recordings. Every type of breathwork you can think of is in there. And you've got this set of breath masters, which I'm so fortunate that I've been asked to be part of, where we're teaching our techniques. The podcast is also in there as well. So the podcast that you're watching right now will also be in the Breath Source app. So make sure that you get the app. You can get started right now for free. The link is down below. I can't wait to see you over there. Jesse's in the app as well. Jesse's incredible. So you're in for a treat in this podcast, and you're in for an even bigger treat with the app. So what are you waiting for? Click that link and let's get started now with the Breathcast. Thank you. Cool. Jesse Coomer in the Breath Space House. How are you doing today, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing great, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Dude, I've been looking forward to have this conversation since I knew that we could do a Breath Space podcast. So your name just keeps coming up and up and up, and all these different people. I don't know, universe is just all kind of connecting. Jesse Coomer and breath work. And so, yeah, can't wait, mate. Can't wait. How's life, first of all? How's things your end?
Things are going really well. Right now, I'm actually working on my next book. So so there's life whenever I'm not working on a book, and there's life when I'm working on a book. I don't even know if it's not necessarily normal life. It's this whole, okay, I got all these ideas. I need to put it down and write them out and make them into something. The problem is I have so many bad jokes that I'm just trying to put them all in, and you know, you just can't fit them all in there. So no, but yeah, things are going really well. The book's coming along just fine, and excited about a lot of really the expansion of breathwork just in general. So, and it is, you know, your name always comes up, and it's long overdue that we've had this conversation. Yeah, for sure. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, defo. It's breathwork's having its time, isn't it, right now? It's I was talking with Patrick McEwen from the Oxygen Advantage, and he was he was already big 4 years ago. So anyway, and he said his business has gone 10 times, it's grown tenfold in 4 years. It's like, oof, you know, they're up to 3,000 coaches now. It's just going crazy.
Yeah. I think the thing is, people are starting to see that, you know, I think, and I mentioned this in my first book, A Practical Guide to Breathwork. Early on, there was such a stigmatism, I think, to breathwork. You have to be, you know, the hippie type, or, you know, it's this whole thing where it's, if you're not into yoga, I don't know, what's that, the Pina Colada song, you know, but if you're not, but if you're not into yoga or whatever, you just aren't going to be into breath work.
Yeah.
And now I think there's so much validation with science. And then I think most people can say they probably have a friend or a relative or someone they've met. And I said, yeah, oh yeah, of course. Yeah, I practice breath work. That's something that I do for stress or to help me with improving my athletic performance. So it's becoming something that I think is more common. It's still something that for the vast majority of people, you say, hey, have you heard of breath work? What's a breath work, right? But at the same time, you get more and more people like, yeah, I've heard of that. What is that all about? So, yeah.
And you know, our mutual connection, Wim Hof, you know, he's done wonders for the industry. I like to call
Yeah.
him he was my gateway drug into breath work.
I have said the exact same words. And I think for most people that was their first really taste into breath work. And I know for me, just starting off, I started getting into breath work because I was trying to meditate. And I found out early on that I was terrible at meditating.
Me
I
too.
am a ruminator, I am a worrier, all of those things that make me the ideal candidate for someone who's like, you need breath work. It's been me my whole life. And I guess some of my background is ultimately a lot of worrying, a lot of rumination. And the thing is, when you don't have good tools, you use whatever tools you can find. And so I used a lot of drugs. So, and drugs work for a little while, right? They can make you feel like, oh, you know what? Maybe I guess I don't have to worry so much. But it'll all catch up, of course. And I struggled with that for a good decade of my life. And and when I came out of that, I had to find tools that were useful and reliable. Like it couldn't just be something that, in theory it should work, it had to be something to actually really work. So I was searching, I started doing exercise, I started doing trying to eat right, which I'm still struggling with. I still like
Me
pizza,
too. Yeah.
you know. But I was messing around with a lot of things, and so I started meditating and had a really hard time. So I got into yoga, I got into some pranayama. And while pranayama is a big part of what I do, it informs a lot of the breath work that I do right now. At first, I think I needed the sledgehammer over my head of like a Wim Hof style or circular breathing. I didn't know about any of the other circular breathings that are out there. I had never heard of, Siddharshan Kriya or Vibhasan or any of these other ones. So Wim Hof, it was the first one I had heard of. And so I tried that and I was like, wow, I really feel something, and I think most of us are so disconnected that we kind of at first need something to say, whoa, there's really something here. And from that point on, it was just a matter of, whoa, there's a whole world of breath work. And you mean to tell me that not only can I do this thing where I breathe way overboard, it's over breathing. I can do this thing where I can breathe minimally, and that's going to do something. Oh, and if I breathe at this pace, and oh, okay. And so the next thing I'm starting to put these things together, and that was kind of the beginning of me coaching people. People are like, "Hey, you do this. Can you give me some advice? Hey, I'm trying to train for this triathlon." Or I'm a martial artist. Can you help me out? The next thing I started kind of putting things together. It's like, well, okay, this is what I would do if I were, that kind of thing. And years go by, and more research comes out, and as you train yourself, and as you get to know all these different people, like when you've trained a lot of people and you've had a lot of one-on-ones and you've gotten to know them really well, and you realize, oh, okay, so it doesn't work the same for everybody, huh? There's breath work, and this is the big thing that I've been really trying to be graceful as I say this, but breath work is not the one simple trick that's going to fix everything, right? It's not clickbait. It's a very profound tool that, when used in the right way, can make you have just a much happier, healthier life. It's not going to make it so that you have no problems. It's not going to cure all your ills and make it so that you never get sick again. But it does it is a powerful tool that, you know, is one of those things where I tell people, and it's true. Every morning I wake up and I'm still like, really? That's a thing? There's really? And I'm still excited about it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. You know, I often say, you know, it's not a silver bullet. It can get you so far, yeah. And it's really good. And there's loads of benefits to it. But often, you know, it's even in, I think, James Nestor's book, I think at the end he says he's sitting on the plane and someone's going, oh, I've got this specific illness. What's the best breathing exercise for that? And it's like, you know, there isn't. So it's, but it's the thing that fascinated me is so many of us still get it wrong on a daily basis. And I was like, whoa, when you start seeing some of the numbers, you're like, a lot of people could benefit from just a little bit of knowledge. And that's so cool. But obviously, we're going through that healing journey together.
Yeah.
Dude, so please go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, this is where my current practice is now. So I have over time developed my own personal philosophy of breath work that is called the language of breath. One thing that I don't know if I've told you this before or if you've heard about this, but I was a English professor for a long time. So college professor for over 10 years. I started to notice that breath is much like a language. And there's a few things that I when it comes to the language of breath that I think we've gotten wrong in breath work, not on purpose. And I think there's just some misconceptions about what we are as people. And whenever you have a misconception about, you know, this is what I am, how you treat yourself changes. So like, for instance, for the longest time, we thought we were made out of four humors. Have you heard about the four humors? So for the longest lived belief in medicine is that human beings are made out of four liquids, and that when these liquids are out of balance, then that's when illness arrives. And that was 2,500 years of medicine, starting with Hippocrates, ending with germ theory. And so like our first president in the United States had like a sore throat, and that's where bloodletting comes from, by the way. So we had all these misconceptions about what we were made out of. What is a human being?
Yeah.
Right? And so as a result, we look at ourselves and we say, okay, well, you kind of use some sense and you're like, well, I guess if you're made out of these things, maybe if you've just got too much one of these humors, let's just drain some of them out and it'll balance out, you know? And so like George Washington had a sore throat. He was our first president, and they basically drained like 70% of his blood. It was just, and he died. And it's just like, well, okay, well, it's not, we can't bring him back. But, but, you know, of course, the way we look at ourselves affects how we treat ourselves. So one of the misconceptions that we have, and I think is really embedded in our language, is that, and this concept of mind and body. Now, when we say mind and body, what we mean is that it's all of us, right? We're like, we'll put it all together. It's all, we're going to work together. But a lot of times we look at ourselves like robots. And I think this is where breath work, sometimes we're like, well, this is like, for instance, James Nestor, I've got a toothache. What kind of breath work should I do? As if you're going to put in a code.
Yeah.
And then you're going to get, you know, type it in the code and then there's the thing. And so I think a lot of times, and this is how we look at nutrition, we look at exercise. Well, and like cold exposure, heat exposure, what exact temperature, how long? Because we're just looking to put in the code and then this is going to be the result. And it's not really that way. So with language of breath, one of the things I encourage my clients to do is to acknowledge that the mind and body is all one thing. You're 37.2 billion cells all trying to survive and all interconnected. Now, we have a conscious experience, but most of what we are is an unconscious experience. There's intelligence in every cell that we have, but we don't have direct access to that. Now, there are ramifications for having a poor relationship with that aspect of ourselves. And of course, we know about the autonomic nervous system. Any breath worker should know, right? We know about the autonomic nervous system. That is one of the unconscious systems that we have. And we don't have direct access to it. We know that breath gives us access to it, but that's just one of the ways that we can have a better relationship with ourselves. Now, what I train, when I train people, I try to, I mean, it's kind of, there's a whole paradigm shift when you look at yourself as a whole thing, as opposed to, you know, there's a geographical divide from up here and then there's down here. And it's this, like this, I guess a flesh robot that you're just driving around. You know, there's, I mean, just literally, if you close your eyes and make, I guess, a peace sign and go up, if you know that you've done that, right? You know that you've done that. That's your conscious self and your unconscious self working together, right? There's an unconscious program or system. I really shouldn't use program if we're trying to get away from the robot mentality, but that is called proprioception. I know. Okay, good. There's a good confluence there. But oftentimes what happens is we ignore or we're really disconnected from what the unconscious believes we're in as far as a situation. And this is one of the reasons why we have runaway stress and anxiety, is that your unconscious self is always trying to help you to survive, and it's always trying to help you to thrive. And it's going to put you into a state that it believes is the best, right? But oftentimes it's trying to, it puts you in a state of sympathetic dominance. When you need to relax, you need to find some rest, you need to go to sleep, you need to recover. And it's through breath that we can form a better relationship. We can say, okay, you know, thank you for trying to help me to survive and thrive. But we can use the breath as a way of messaging to that unconscious self, let's calm down a little bit, you know. And so breath has to do with, yes, learning to send a signal, but it also equally important has to do with being aware of the state. And so when we talk language of breath, it's not just learning breath techniques, it's also learning how to become aware of what the autonomic nervous system is trying to do, what your unconscious self, what emotions are coming up, how that influences you, so that you can form a better relationship with yourself. Because we're not a robot. You know, we ultimately, human beings, we are a relationship within ourselves. And we're a relationship with the environment. And so our environment, we can't always control that. And our unconscious self is going to respond in a certain way. And so we learn how to listen to what it has to say. We can learn how to reply and form that better relationship within ourselves.
That's
So
beautiful.
that's my basic, that's the kind of at the foundation of my practice. And when you start at that point, then it becomes something where it's not just something I do in the morning. It's not just something I do in the evening or, you know, at whatever time. Every breath matters, right? And you talk to any, you know, it's not like that's a concept that's foreign to breath workers of any quality. Of course, we understand every breath matters. But then you start with, okay, there's constant communication with in myself. So every breath should matter because my breaths and the way I breathe, that's sending a signal, that's sending a message. So that's at the heart of the language of breath.
Hey guys, real quick, if you're enjoying this conversation so far, maybe you want to click on the link below and come and join us on the Breath Source. The link is down below. You can get started on Apple and Android. All the links are down there. Click one link, get started. You might notice that at some points in these conversations, I refer to it as the breath space. Ignore that. We were playing with different names last year. I'm so glad we landed on the Breath Source. So the Breath Source link is down below. I will see you on it. Back on with the conversation. Cheers.
Yeah, no, it's lovely, and I love the term language of breath, and I'd love to see you in your element being a. So you're an English language professor. So what? Just give me a little glimpse into that life. What was that life like?
So I literally, this is my first year. I had to put it down. So this is my first year, not first year in 11. See, this is that I've not been a college professor. So when I went through my big change, so, and this is something, you know, maybe not breath related, but it's something that if there's anybody listening or watching that you are struggling with addiction, or if you're trying to change your life in a positive way, I do a lot of talks about breath work at drug rehab clinics and things like that. But one of the things I always say is, ultimately, you have to, if you're trying to put something in your past, You can't just put something in your past. You can't be a not person. You can't just say, okay, I am not that thing anymore. You have to define, okay, I'm moving in a different direction. So mm-hmm. I decided I got to make myself into something. I've got to do something with myself. So as I was getting off of a drug addiction, I enrolled in grad school. And that might sound a bit extreme, but it was exactly what I needed to do, because it gave me a direction to move forward toward. It wasn't just, I'm trying to quit this thing, as I'm stepping into this other thing. And so I've always found philosophy and rhetoric to be very powerful for me. I've always enjoyed that. And so I became a English professor, and I've taught English. I taught some Brit Lit, taught a little bit of you guys, taught a little of us. You know, if they're using the English language, I was teaching it. And so for a little over a decade, I did that, and mostly college freshmen, college sophomores. And you talk about a real litmus test for how time changes and how stressors change. And you see how, okay, young people do need those tools. And so in my last few years, I would actually take out my students. Okay, guys, this is a nice enough day. This is one nice thing about being a college professor, as opposed to, I guess, an elementary or high school. We can go, let's just walk outside. Okay, just come on. Let's just go find a nice tree to sit underneath. Okay, I'm going to teach you a technique. And at first, everybody's like, I don't know if I want to, you know, Professor Coomer, he's weirdo. But then by the time we're done, they're like, oh, there might be something to that. I was like, okay. And one of the things we often have in college, in the United States, we have this thing called the GI Bill. So if a person serves in the military, we pay for their education. And so we have a lot of veterans who are suffering from PTSD and just in general have a lot of stress in their lives. A lot of times they're coming back, their parents, they're trying to be a parent and a student and work full time and all these things. And the last class I taught, I had a veteran. He's like, man, I wish someone would have shown me this in the military. I really could have used this a lot earlier.
Yeah.
So being an English professor was a fantastic, fun job. I think that one of the things I've always been passionate about is just trying to help people have a practical application to what we need, right? We need to learn how to write. We don't necessarily have to remember all 13 comma rules. Now, that there's 13 in the United States. One of the things I love about English is that it's not the same. We're speaking it, but the way we write it is different. Yeah. I found that out whenever a friend of mine published his book. And here in the United States, for instance, we don't say, I reckon, very often. If you say, I reckon, it's because you're a cowboy. It's I reckon, right? But in Europe, man, you guys say that a lot. And when I first heard a European say it, I thought they were just kind of joking around. And I thought, oh, that's funny. And they're like, what? And so I love language. I love how we can communicate. And the thing is, language is more than just words, right? We have gestures, we have tone, inflection, and things like that. And we can apply that to breath as well. So it was just a natural way. I think it was just a natural thing for me to apply my love for language to breath. I couldn't help myself. Maybe.
No, you got me thinking, like, because the words can be the same, but how they're perceived is so different, isn't it? And example, you know, I might say, oh, good for you, or good for you.
That's huge.
You know, and so my intention, the way you receive it, and I guess like you said at the start of this, you know, different people have different responses to to breath work, don't they?
Yeah.
And different exercises get complete. You know, I've had floods of tears and laughter from the, you know, from the same breathing exercise, or I've seen somebody else in a completely yeah. different state to me. So it's I really like it. I'm heavily dyslexic, by the way. So I would really struggle with the old. That's why I probably enjoy the talking more, because when it comes to the. So if anybody is watching this and they've ever got an email from me on my distribution list, I guarantee they've found at least one grammatical error.
And as you tell someone you're an English professor, they're like, oh man, they start kind of watching what they say.
Yeah.
And then, but the thing is, if you've noticed, I'm not speaking in a way that's like high English. my dad is dyslexic as well. Uh-huh. And he always kids that, you know, if you need someone to proofread your book, don't ask me.
Don't
right?
ask me. Yeah. So,
but yeah, our tone and inflection, it really makes a big difference as far as how something is received. I love the example, good for you, right? And actually people say that so often. So I would say people say that more commonly now, at least here in the States, in a sarcastic kind of a flippant way, good for you.
Yeah,
good
exactly.
for you, you know, that kind of thing. And so whenever you say, hey, good for you, sometimes people take that the wrong way because they've heard it so used one way. And this is where there's so many correlations. And this is the thing about language is ultimately what blows my mind, you know, and hey, we're just going to nerd out a little bit.
Yeah, please.
What blows my mind is that the dominant language of your country was French for hundreds of years.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? And so here in the United States, I don't know if you guys do this, but if somebody says a curse word, someone will say, hey, watch your French.
Yes.
You guys do that?
Yeah.
So the reason why that is because the dominant language of like the upper crust people for, I forget, it was like 200 years in England was French. And so if you used Anglo-Saxon, it was a dirty word. And so people say, watch your French, not because French was the dirty word. French was the high class word.
Yeah.
And the dirty word was the Anglo-Saxon word, which eventually became, well, at the time it was English technically.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, but anyway, hang around me, Mike, and you'll learn things that you'll never need to know.
Amazing.
Again.
Yeah. That's my favorite kind of knowledge. The knowledge you don't read. Do you know, there's the word that keeps coming to mind for me at the minute is intention. And I keep hearing people, I've heard it a few times now saying, set an intention. But then I hear what people saying, when you set an intention, you put yourself into tension. And I was like, oh, that's interesting thinking about it, isn't it? Because we use that a lot in breath work. Set your intention for your practice. But maybe you're making yourself tense. I need to feel a certain way or something. So I'm always
This is huge. Yeah. This is huge in breath work. And this is one of the things that, and I'm going to explain it. My new book will come out next year. And I do explain some of it in my online course, but, when it comes to intention setting, this is, I think, one of the most overlooked or misunderstood element of breath work. Mm-hmm. And I would say anything that you do set an intention for, and I think they were getting at it whenever they said you put yourself in tension whenever you set an intention. So let's just, and so actually, I tell you what, let's do a quick practice. We don't have to do any breath work necessarily, but okay. So for those of you guys who are watching or listening, just close your eyes, try to just kind of become relaxed. Take a deep breath, maybe. And just scan yourself, okay? So most of the world, we're in that mind-body paradigm. If you wanted to say, I'm going to scan my body. But if you're in the language of breath zone, say, I'm going to scan my entire whole being. And then now, think of the person that you would like to become, or any intention, anything that you would like to dedicate a practice to, and just notice if you can that you will feel a slight change physically. Okay, now you can clear your mind, you can open your eyes. That's where we start most breath sessions. Okay, so let's set an intention. Now we're going to have a practice. And what happens is, no matter what intention you set, you've got an opinion. Your unconscious self has an opinion on what that's like. So for instance, maybe I might say, I would like to become an extrovert. Now for me, it's too late. I'm never going to not be an extrovert, but that's a common one that a lot of my clients say, hey, I feel like and just has a little background on me. I have always been an extreme extrovert and I've always had extreme social anxiety, which is like the worst combination to have. But ultimately, whatever it is that you are looking to do, whatever that came to mind, you're going to have an emotional response. You're going to have feelings that come up. And that's a physical thing. Okay. That's something that's not necessarily just intellectual. You're going to feel it. And when we think about that thing, when we bring those things up, it might bring tension up. You might say, I would like to be an extrovert. But then bringing that to mind brings up a lot of fear that you might have about, you know, speaking in public or being around a group of people. And that can put you into a state of tension. Now, does that make it bad? Maybe, maybe not. I am of the persuasion that it's not necessarily a bad thing because of where it's coming from. So we have a conscious self and we have, most of us is unconscious. So, at any time, like this very moment, we are taking in about 11 million pieces of information. We can only consciously process 40.
Yeah.
So the vast majority of who we are, our personality, our, the way we look at life is an unconscious thing, but it's still you, right? Mm. So when you consciously bring up, I want to be an extrovert, you've got opinions on yourself that can arise. And so I'm of the opinion that that is coming from a place of love. It's trying to protect you from making a fool out of yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Now that sucks, right? It's like, man, I don't have any confidence in myself. Well, once you acknowledge that that is coming from a place of love, it's not an outside thing, an outside judge. It's just a part of you that's trying to protect you. Then you can start to acknowledge, okay, that's what that is. It's coming from a place of love and it's trying to help me to survive and thrive. I don't have to suffer from that.
Mm.
It doesn't have to define me. And I can sit with that. And then, okay, well, guess what? I've just realized that when I think, even when I just think about becoming an extrovert, it causes me to tense up. So whenever I go out and try to be an extrovert, which there's a lot of research in cognitive science, is the whole fake it till you make it, right? Now, some people say, oh, that, throw that out. But a lot of times, if you just start to behave in a way that you'd like to be, you can move the needle. You may not ever be extreme extrovert, but maybe you'll go from being, you know, paralyzed introvert to person who can really handle themselves in a social situation. Well, okay, I want to go out and I know that it causes me tension. So before I get to the party or whatever, you know, there's that box breathing. Or I can manage my breath because the alarm bells are going to go off. I know that part about myself because I've taken that time to get to know myself. Oh, wow. Okay. So now I can make a plan to work with myself because I know I've got this partner, right? Who's going to be like, let's leave the party. And it's still me, but I can, as I'm there and I feel, man, I need to get out of here because fight, flight, let's get out. No, I consciously want to make the decision to be here because this is a change I'm trying to make in my life. Well, guess what? I can apply what I know about the language of breathing to make it through the night. And then whenever I go home, I don't know. We all know what it's like to do something maybe you didn't want to do. It was difficult. But when you leave, man, I did that. And the more times you do those things, the more times you start to realize, I'm a person who can do that. And before you know it, that unconscious part of you that is amazing at picking up patterns starts to pick up a pattern about you. that you're a person who can, in this case, this fictional story, be comfortable at parties.
Yeah.
And so we can do so much with our breath. And, you know, it's really incredible. And I think the beauty is we're only at the beginning of figuring out just the potential of what we can do. And this is why everybody needs to learn how to use it when we're young. Yeah. So we don't have to suffer like I did from social anxiety. And then I was like, oh, I guess I need to do some drugs so I can go out and fulfill my extroverted needs.
Yeah. But just before I've got on to respond to that, how's my audio? Because it seems like it's a real mess over here. How's it coming across to you?
You sound amazing.
Oh, that's really weird. Because it's a sound great. I have to cut this bit out, but it's peaking all over the place. That sounds like it's.
Am I peaking all over the place?
No, you sound good. Okay. It's me looking at the monitor on my side.
Oh, well, you sound great over on this side.
Oh, that's weird.
And I got to ask, do you have a special webcam?
I have a very good DSLR camera here. Yeah.
See, I can't figure out. I've been trying to figure out how to make my DSLR work with Zoom.
Yeah. Oh, I can give you all of that. Don't worry. I can share it with you.
Someday. Yeah. Cause like I it's always this, you know how it is.
No, technical
so
stuff.
Much I need to figure out.
Oh, don't even get me started. It's a minefield. I'll make a note, chop this little bit out. But I'm more introverted than extroverted. So I really love a one-on-one chat, but put me in the group and I get very sweaty. And so my thing wasn't really drugs, it was more alcohol. So yeah, I would smash the wine back. and most of my 30s was that. And for me, going and doing the Wim Hof thing in Poland and getting in the cold bath, that was like you said at the start, shit, there's other ways to unlock feelings. It doesn't have to always be about deadening them with booze or
right.
And for me, just going back to what you said a second ago as well about, you know, this fictional kind of person going, oh, I did that. I went out and I did some box breathing. For me, that was the cold. It was going into the cold bath and going, like, oh, I'm a guy that can handle the cold. And I've been able to follow that ripple effect through the last sort of 6 years, abseiling, jumping tombstoning, quitting my job, whatever those things were, and I can trace it all back to jumping in the ice bath that time. So I completely understand and agree with what you're saying there, Jesse, which is like sometimes you just have to kind of put yourself in an uncomfortable situation, use the breath or be aware of the breath, and it takes you in a magical place.
I 100% can relate to that. When it comes to cold training, you've got actually a very interesting situation there. So cold training is a lethal thing, right? You're training with something that literally will kill you if you stay in it long enough. And it's also something that there's a lot of research that shows that that it consistently causes your locus coeruleus in your brain to release norepinephrine. So norepinephrine is something that we also experience as anxiety. And so, you know, like, for instance, I think we all know what it's like. Well, maybe there's lucky people out that don't know what it's like to ruminate and to ruin your night's sleep because you've ruminated. But genetically, I'm just predisposed to do that, I think. And so this is why these practices are so foundational. So important for me. But what happens is there's a part of your brain that is called your motivational network. And which is interesting. Have you ever noticed how you can never really decide what you're going to worry about?
I've never thought about that before. That's really good.
Well, it is you, but it's your unconscious you. Yeah. And there's a part of our brain called the motivational network that it decides. It decides what you're going to worry about. And it will tell you. And it'll pop up into your conscious mind. And you're like, oh my God. Did I turn off the stove before I left the house, or did I lock the doors, or, you know, what's going to happen about that thing I'm worried about tomorrow? And it does that to try to help us to, again, it's all about survival and thriving. So it wants us to thrive. So what it does is it will send us dopamine, and the dopamine is there to nudge us into action. You're going to explore the area. You're going to eliminate any uncertainty, make sure there's no snakes or whatever. But so much of life, especially modern life, is not so simple as make sure there's no snakes. And so what happens is whenever the dopamine doesn't work, that's when the locus coeruleus says, don't worry, I'll help you. And it adds anxiety, which is basically norepinephrine. Now, norepinephrine for our ancient ancestors was fantastic because when we experience what we call anxiety nowadays, which is the secretion of norepinephrine into our brain, that enhances all of our senses. So you can actually see, we have these weird superpowers that we hate nowadays because we're like, oh, this just, it's all just too much, right? But actually your sense of hearing improves, your sense of smell is enhanced. You know, your sense of sight is enhanced. If you've got a, I always tell whenever I talk to kids, like high schoolers and things, and whenever I was in college, a college teacher, I would say, if you think your date's going to be nervous, don't forget deodorant and cologne or perfume. You know, make sure you smell good because they'll be able to smell you much better. And that's how it is as humans. And it worked for most of human history. We want to be able to see our, you know, the predator or our prey before it can see us and smell before it can smell us. Well, nowadays, you know, that doesn't have as much help, but it's norepinephrine. Now, the interesting thing is the connection to ice bathing. And I wrote an ebook about that. I'm thinking I'll eventually publish it as a paperback. So check out my website if you want to find the ebook. But the interesting thing is it's been shown in research that we never build a tolerance to cold exposure. And every time you get into whatever temperature, let's suppose, oh, and this is the great thing about me being American and having this weird imperial system is that I'm going to say Fahrenheit. And I have, let's just say, I think 40 Fahrenheit is 4 Celsius. So okay. That's one that I'm pretty sure about.
Okay.
So let's suppose we get in 4 Celsius. That's a good cold exposure. Yeah. And so you get into 4 Celsius and you're in there for 2 minutes. Research shows that you'll produce the exact same amount of norepinephrine. Mm-hmm. Remember, that's the anxiety neurochemical. You'll produce the exact same amount on day 1 as you will on day 20, as you will on day 100, as you will on day 1,000, as you will the rest of your life. So you don't ever build a tolerance to the actual chemical, the neurochemical norepinephrine. So you get to train with the exact same biochemistry as intense traffic or Susie's being a total bee at the office, or, you know, the boss is mad at you. You get to train with that brain chemistry. And so not only are you saying, I'm a person, and you're proving it to yourself, you're teaching your unconscious self, because your unconscious self is a pattern detector too. It picks up patterns and it's like, huh, we seem to be able to make a difficult decision to get into a cold shower every day. We must be people. I must be a person who can make difficult decisions. That's huge. I think that's probably, yes, there's all sorts of, you know, physical benefits and immune system, this and anti-inflammation. But I think even if those things weren't there, the benefit of proving to yourself on a regular basis, you're a person who can make a difficult decision. That's
huge.
Oh my God. Right?
So huge. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to do this, and yet I'm going to make myself do this. You feel so much better. The days that I wimp out and I don't do it, I've got a little voice going, you should have done it, shouldn't you?
Yeah, I should have done it. Yeah.
That's interesting. What's the role with
norepinephrine? Yeah.
Say it again for me.
Norepinephrine.
Norepinephrine.
Now in America we call it noradrenaline, but we go back and forth. We go back and forth in America on that one. In Europe, I'm speaking your language. I'm teasing.
Norepinephrine. I can't say it. Noradrenaline and cortisol. Mm-hmm. Is there a link between those two?
Yeah.
To me, cortisol was the anxiety thing, but that's more the stress thing, isn't it?
Well, actually, they're all what we would consider catecholamines, so stress hormones. So you'll experience a lot of these all at the same time. Cortisol is one of these that you tend to get a nice little boost whenever you're in a stressed situation, which is not a problem as long as you're not chronically stressed. But what happens is the average person is so disconnected. This is one of the reasons why we do what we do, right? The average person is so disconnected. I was so disconnected that I had no idea that I was in chronic stress. And you'll see, the thing is, here in the United States, we've got a real problem. When I was in I've only been in Europe one time, and I realized that even though you drink espresso coffee and we drink the drip, right? That's the big difference. We in America, we overdo caffeine like crazy. The average American, I had a caffeine habit a few years back that I didn't realize just how heavy my caffeine intake was until, listen to this, until I realized, you know what, if I'm going to get off of caffeine, I need to drink Red Bull in order to help me get off of caffeine.
Shit.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And the average, so Red Bull has 80 milligrams of caffeine, which is a little bit, that's, I would say that's similar or to a, maybe a double espresso or an espresso. That's in the same ballpark. You, in the United States, we drink energy drinks, like Europeans drink bubbly water, like, you know, and we drink it way too much and they taste really good and all this stuff. Well, they've continued to bump up the caffeine and now it's like 200, 300 milligrams in just one drink.
Yeah, it's too much.
And it's just ridiculous. And see, the thing is, we have people that are so stressed out. So I'm getting back to the cortisol, I promise.
Oh, nice. Good.
We're so chronically stressed that we're blowing through all of these stress hormones and we need something, strangely enough, to give us more energy because we're just constantly stressed out. And then eventually you just run out. Now we also have this love affair. And of course we imported this to you guys. We have this love affair with fast food. Right. And so one of the things I always talk about is I think the biggest and maybe the cruelest joke of the modern world is fast food and drive through. You've got this chronic stress situation. You wake up, you get stressed out, you drink coffee, Americans drink whatever they're going to drink, and you're going through the day stressed out. The cortisol levels are very high. Chronically high cortisol levels help us by saying, hey, you need to ingest high fat, high sugars, because God knows we must be in a war zone or something. And you need to get fueled up. Well, okay, so you plan to have a salad for lunch, but you're like, for some reason, this is just not going to work. I have to have the Big Mac or the Whopper or whatever. And so this willpower that you thought you were going to have is completely diminished because there's a part of you that's an unconscious part of you that's trying to help you survive. But it believes you're in a war zone because you're just chronically stressed and you haven't done anything to modulate that stress. In fact, we've caffeinated. So we're just enhancing the stress. We're mouth breathing, you know, all about that. Right. And so, okay. Whenever it comes time to eat, oh my gosh, all that cortisol makes us overeat. Then we're eating all this sugar, all this carbs, all the fats and things that are going to make us breathe even faster. Right. Because when we ingest all these sugars and carbs, we start to produce more CO2. And, you know, anyone who watches this, I'm sure is very well familiar. CO2 makes you need to breathe, right? And so no matter how high your CO2 tolerance is, you can do a controlled pause in the morning. And it's just like, oh man, I've got 1,000 or, you know, just insane number, right?
Yeah.
But no matter how high that is, if you're producing more CO2, you're going to breathe faster. And of course, you were stressed out all morning. You're stressed out when you go to the drive-through, and then now you're breathing even faster. So you're going to stress out. The average person, then they come home and they're just like, I just sat at a desk all day, but I am physically exhausted.
Yeah.
And there's no way I can do anything, you know, productive. I'm not going to exercise or do anything else like that. Mm-hmm. And it's because we have an unchecked stress response, which is actually, strangely enough, a part of you that's trying to help you survive the day.
Yeah.
So yeah, all these catecholamines, they can also feel very good. And so this is why much of breath work just feels amazing. Because catecholamines, the stress hormones, oftentimes are paired with endorphins. And endorphins, I believe, comes from Greek. There's like two Greek words they put together to make endorphins, and it means morphine-like.
Ooh.
Yeah. So you're doing drugs. And
Yeah.
this is one of the reasons why I feel like so many people, when you're getting off of like an opioid addiction, that we've got a plague over here. I mean, it's just a worldwide epidemic of just opioid addiction. The best thing for you to do is get into the gym, exercise. You're going to make those endorphins happen. They literally fit into the same place where morphine would fit in your brain.
Cool.
And then there's some breath work that also does that as well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that a person can do to feel good, and it's actually good for them. And some of it has to do with stress hormones, but when those are in check, they're actually working for your benefit. You should have stress hormones if you are at the gym exercising, or you should, or running from a bear, or in an actual stressful situation, they're appropriate. It's just that we are so disconnected as modern people that we're just like, I guess this is what normal life feels like, and it just goes unchecked.
Yeah, your baseline is different,
Yes.
and you don't know until it's like if you sometimes you don't know how drunk you are until you're sober, and it's like, Jesus, I was really drunk last night. Oh mate, that's fascinating, isn't it? The old stress stuff. Yeah, I recently had some work done. I was in Wales, and a guy was testing my organs, different things, and he said my adrenals were on empty. Because I've just been living in a high chronic state of stress. This was about a year ago, so changed a few things, got a little bit of rewriting limiting beliefs, and took these supplements. And I think that the most interesting thing for me, and I'm sure there's some placebo in this as well, because you're making some changes in life, I just felt so much stronger about 12 weeks later. I just felt strong, and I wasn't doing m more weightlifting or anything, but I remember just feeling, and I was like, I'm not necessarily strong now, but I'm not weak. I was weaker before because my adrenals were just pumping me out. So my baseline, I thought was normal, was here. I was actually down here, and probably same thing with stress up here. So that's really interesting. Yeah, we're not far behind you, to be honest with you. I see people walking down the street with the big energy drinks.
Oh, they're there now. Oh boy.
They're there,
Oh boy.
people.
I'm
Although
sorry.
it was only America. It was only recently I found out though that the espresso is one of the lowest forms of caffeine. And in my mind, it was one of the biggest ones. I was like, whoa, I didn't know
It's
that.
one of these things where I think just because you've got like this small thing that is technically giving you the same caffeine as, like, I mean, all I drink when I'm in Europe is usually Americano,
Yeah.
okay? But I can't help
Taste
it.
of home.
But like what we have is the drip coffee, so it's
Sure,
like
sure.
like a large thing, but that whole thing is about the same caffeine as in an espresso. I think because of that, we feel like it's a shot, oh, it's an espresso shot. But
Interesting.
yeah, I mean, it depends. Now, if you have the Turkish coffee, I'm just saying, I remember my wife is Puerto Rican, and I remember the first time I had coffee with them. Of course, they have a hard time pronouncing J's. So they're, okay, Yessi, here you go, Yessi.
Nice.
And I was like, they gave me a little cup, and I was like, I can drink this. I say, you might need some milk. You need to dilute it a little. I'm like, no, I'm a
Nah.
big boy. I can take it down. I was like, tapping my foot and
Yeah, just
afterward.
going. My girlfriend, she's Polish, and so we go back to Poland, and her grandma's, she's 93. And so I was making a cup of coffee around her house last year or the year before, and you just get, one spoon of coffee, and she says in Polish to my girlfriend, she goes, "Why does he drink coffee like a girl?" And I was like, "What the hell?" And she puts in three or four spoons of coffee. I was like, "Jesus Christ!" But
I'm just saying, there comes a time when the coffee is pouring itself. I feel like it's that strong of coffee that
yeah.
it
Rocket
actually has an
fuel.
arm.
Oh, dude, mate, we're gonna have to do another one of these. I feel like we could just talk for hours. I'm conscious. I would love to just pick your brains a bit about breath space. What
Please, yes, I'm excited about this.
Yeah, me too. What, just for people that maybe have not heard about it yet, what is it, and why did you sign up?
Yeah, so I'm sure you've been approached before by apps, and I have been approached for years, apps saying, hey, this is our thing and we'd like you to represent. And I honestly, to be honest, I'm just this may be controversial, but I'm generally against apps. I feel like apps generally, they oversimplify breath work. They make it into just count this many and hold this many and this many. And it's like it's a cheap imitation of what you get whenever you're actually led by a human being. And so I've always said no. And actually breath space, when they approached me, I was just really almost ready to just click delete. And they but I noticed that they were talking about a collaboration. And this is why I'm so excited, because I don't feel like it is an app that tells you how to breathe with some timers and, oh, you know, you get the thing that goes up and down or whatever. This is a collaboration with other breath workers who have different modes of thinking, different schools of thought. So for instance, the language of breath is going to be there, but there's also going to be people who are doing, you know, like I think there's a guy who he does a thing, he calls it DMT breathing, and there's going to be pranayama, and there's going to be is there going to be oxygen advantage?
There's going to be a take a deep breath section with all my little mix mash of different breathing exercises, but there will also be an oxygen advantage one and a Buteyko one on there. Yes. So there's going to be a few. Yeah.
I mean, just think about that. You know, it's this collaboration where it's like, okay, today I want Mike to guide me through, and then tomorrow maybe I'll have you know, Jesse, and then or throughout the day. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so as this thing has grown, we have these calls, and, you know, we were on this call the other day. It really is a community of people. And that's why I feel so really good about it. So everybody, whenever you sign up for it, you get access to everyone's content, and we add more content. It's real breath workers adding their wisdom that they've accumulated. It's not AI trying to imitate what a human can be. And that's why I think it's so powerful. So I'm really looking forward. I'm so glad that you're a part of it. And there's just so many names that I'm like, oh, cool. Oh yeah. All right. I've really been a fan. Yeah. So yeah, I'm really, really excited about the breath space.
Yeah, cool, man. Me too. I just spoke to another one of our colleagues, Jen Broyles. I was talking to her earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And she said it really nicely as well. She said, you know, it's one place you can go where it's only breath work, you know, it's all breath work. There's nothing else going on there. And in there, you get access to a range of instructors. And I was like, oh, that's such a really nice way that you just put that. And there's live classes, but there's also stuff that's pre-recorded. So you can just pay, you know, your monthly fee, which is not very much. And you go in and you've got access to all this amazing content that you haven't got to sift through. And everyone's been pre-qualified as well. So you've not got random people there. You've got people that have kind of got proven skin in the game, you know, and all that. So it's the app I would have wanted like 5 years ago. You know?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's finally the one, right? You know, after all these years, it's like, okay, someone figured it out.
Yes.
And I don't feel like there's a boss or someone who's telling us, you know, it's collaboration. And that to me is so powerful, but yeah, it's just breath. That's the beauty. Get there. It's just breath. And then you have a lot of different experts and a lot of different styles. And I think that's just a beautiful thing.
Yeah, no, beautiful, man. We'll bring this puppy home, and if you're up for it, maybe we can do a part two. Maybe early next year, because I want to pick your brains a lot more. I often think, you know, an hour's it's just not enough to get stuck into some of these conversations, especially with you. I just want to keep digging at your
breath, man. Yeah, I've had a great time.
Yeah, man. Couple of quick questions for you then. So, as well as obviously your own book, what other books would you recommend to somebody? Have you got any other favorite books that come to mind?
Yeah, I really do like James Nestor's book. I found it to be a really honest, and down to earth evaluation of a lot of styles and techniques. And I'm really excited. My friend Chuck McGee is in it, so I have to like it, right? So, that one right there is a fantastic book to get a person introduced to breath work. There's so many books. Like if you're looking to just kind of get for instance, of course, mine is A Practical Guide to Breathwork, but Richie Bostock also has a fantastic book called Exhale, and it's so funny. We both published, and we didn't realize it. But whenever we were starting to promote our books, I was like, oh, you're doing a book that's kind of a similar book that I'm doing. And our books are coming out in the same month. So we published I've known him for years, and we published in the same month, the same year. And hey, you know, I love Richie, and his book is really good too. And I would say the nice thing about it is if our books didn't overlap. Of course, the first thing I did was I was like, okay, I got to buy this book to make sure it's not like just us saying exactly the same things.
Yeah.
There's a lot. I mean, it's not like we're conflicting. So it's not like you're going to read mine and read his, and then it's like, well, you guys are arguing with each other. No, it's it agrees, but he adds a lot of things that I didn't put in mine. I put a lot of things in mine that he doesn't have in his. Mm-hmm. The nice thing is it's an overall thing that you can use to form a breath practice. And especially for a person who might be a beginner or a person who's just done the gateway drug of Wim Hof, or you just started with another modality and you're like, what else is out there? Richie Bostock's Exhale, I would highly recommend. So those are two, I would say those would be your first two to buy.
Yeah.
And then after that, I would start thinking about, okay, well, certainly buy my book, and how can I forget? How can I forget Draw Breath?
Of course.
Our friend Tom.
Yeah.
Oh, this book. So I was an English and graphic design major in undergrad. And so I'm nowhere close to his skill, but I know how to appreciate art when you see it. And it is beautiful, fantastic.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful book. I think you did a review on it. Mm-hmm. And I know I've seen Patrick McEwen do a quick rundown of it.
Mm-hmm.
It is so much fun. And especially for a person, especially for a young person,
mm-hmm.
it gives you that kinesthetic quality you can add to your breath. So I'm a big fan of that.
Fan. Yeah. No, good book. So obviously we'll get your book as well. We're going to link all your stuff down below. And now that I know that you've got a connection to Richie, because I've been trying to get hold of Richie to come on the podcast, so maybe you can put a good word in for me to
that guy. Yeah, I got to say he's been a world traveler lately.
Yeah, he's a busy guy. He's a busy, busy guy,
and he's going down to the Amazon all the time now. So I'm jealous. He's jet setting. I'll maybe put a bug in his ear.
And if you got stuck on a desert island, what's one breathing technique you'd take with you?
If I was stuck on a desert island, oh man, just to pick one, I'm a big fan of the sniff, sniff, poo, and especially because it is so good in moments of overwhelm.
Show me it. I don't know that one. Go on.
So sniff, sniff, poo is ultimately you take a sniff in through the nose two times. So it's two times inhale, and then you make a poo at the end. So it's fantastic at parties, right? You go, so here it comes. So the first inhale is about 70% full. The last inhale is filling the rest to the very brim. And then you just let it out nice and relaxed. So here's how it would look. So I teach this to a lot of different groups, but it's fantastic for times of overwhelm. I also do a lot of training with police, and there's times whenever you're overwhelmed with an emotion and you're still in charge. And if I were on a desert island, I would probably be overwhelmed by emotion, but I still got to create fire with, I guess, my volleyball Wilson. Or whatever the movie was like, but I, you know, that is one that can help you get past whatever you're overwhelmed with and into a better headspace.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. Cool, man. So we've got some book recommendations. Sniff, sniff, poo. I like that. I'm going to use that later. cool. Okay. So for everyone watching, Jesse's links or listening, Jesse's links will be down below in the show notes. Make sure you check out his website and his book. And also we will link to BreathSpace, our new app, which we will both be on. So make sure you check that out as well, because that is launching. It's the 23rd of September right now. So I'm not quite sure. It should be out in the next month or two. It depends when these podcasts go out. So if you're listening to this, it's most likely out or just about to come out. Jesse, any final words from yourself before we call it a day?
I just want to again reiterate, I could talk to you for a long time. I'm having a great time. An hour certainly is enough. It went by really, really too fast. Definitely looking forward to what's to come with the breath space. And if people are interested in the Language of Breath, you can check out languageofbreathcollective.com. Of course, it'll be in the notes as well. So thank you so much, Mike, for having me. And I'm looking forward to maybe our next time.
Defo. Thank you, Jesse. This has been way long overdue, this one. So I'm so glad we finally got to connect and have a good chat about breath. And until next time, thank you so much. And everyone, thank you for watching. Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode. I need you to do just one thing for me. If you got any value from the episode, please click on the link in the show notes or down below in the video description and go on over to the Breath Source. Come and join me on the Breath Source app. Me and all these other wonderful breathwork instructors, you can get started for free today. We have put our life, our heart, our soul into this app. There's retreats in there you can go on. There's teacher training. There's every breathing exercise you can think of, all taught by their own breathwork instructors with our own flavors and modalities and training and experiences. Come for me and find Jesse or find Kat or find Travis or find one of these wonderful human beings in there and come and play with the breath with us. So the link is down below. I hope to see you on there. This podcast, the Breathcast, is also in there. Ed Harold's Life with Breath podcast is also in there as well. So we want to make a place for you where you can find our breathing exercises that are on YouTube, as well as new stuff, as well as live stuff, as well as new breath friends, a real community, a real hub for breathing. So I'm so excited about this. I cannot wait to see you in the app. The link is down below. And I will see you over on the Breath Source in 2 seconds. I'm going to hold my breath and I'm going to wait for you. Go, click on the link. Have you clicked it yet? Hurry up. Please. See you on the Breath Source. Cheers.